Well, we know that there are so many great aspects and elements about our community. And one of those that people might not immediately think of, but I think is pretty high on folks' lists, is our great transit system, which is a fare-free transit system. Chapel Hill Transit this weekend is going to be celebrating 20 years of being fare-free, that anniversary coming up. And joining me on the phone today to talk a little bit more about that anniversary is the current director of Chapel Hill Transit, Brian Litchfield. Brian, thanks so much for taking the time. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks, Brighton, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year indeed. So I know that you haven't been with Chapel Hill Transit for all of those 20 years that the system has been fare-free, but what history is known about why Chapel Hill made this move and what the move was like 20 years ago?
Sure, and I think the one of the important things about the fare-free system, just like transit service in general, is that what makes it work well is the partnership between the two towns and the university. So you have the town of Chapel Hill, the town of Carborough, and the university, who are partners in the system and help provide the service. And it's that partnership that helped create the fare-free opportunity back in 2002 and prior to that point. And I think without that partnership, it would have been really hard or more difficult to go down not only the road of being fare-free, but also to go down the road of providing the services that we provide today and doing things like electric vehicles and bus rapid transit and those sort of things. So I think a lot of the success of the transit system, fare-free and beyond, is based on that partnership. And some of the thinking that went into, the creation of the fare-free system is all three of the partners have significant interest and commitment to the environment and sustainability in creating multimodal systems. So having access to, transportation options for all community members, regardless of, income or regardless of whether they have a vehicle or not, is important to all three. There was also a lot of conversation at the time around traffic congestion and should we be building parking garages or expanding roadways and doing those sort of things. And those things, not only were they not necessarily consistent with the environmental interest and the sustainability interest, they were just things that didn't make sense from a finance perspective as well. And of course, there's interest in, expanding usage of public transportation as well and removing barriers to transit and providing equitable transportation services for not only the members of our community, but also visitors as well.
What were some of the initial challenges as the switch was being made? Because I imagine that, as you said, it takes a good bit of buy-in from those three groups, and then from the rider perspective, it's pretty easy. You just hop on the buses. But were there any kind of growing pains that the transit system went through as it was making this switch?
Yeah, absolutely. And we still, we still experience some of those growing pains, mostly pre-COVID, but to this day. So the transit system, this is something that I always tell folks, other communities or folks that are interested in looking at fare-free services, it was not just a matter of turning the system and services to fare-free. Right? So in order to do that, we also increased service substantially, creating high-frequency corridors where we were providing frequent service. Because you can have fare-free transit service, but fare-free hourly service or fare-free service worse than that doesn't really, isn't going to do, you or the community any good. So the partners made a commitment to not only being fare-free, but also making sure that there were quality services available to the customer. So we invested in the service and have had to continue to invest in service as more folks have utilized the system. In fact, our ridership went from just under 3 million in 2002 to just before COVID, we were doing about 7 million rides a year. So the ridership went up drastically. All of that not just because of fare-free, but fare-free helped set the table for that success. And the fact that ridership is some of the highest ridership per capita in the United States. We're at 7 million rides a year. We're doing more rides at the time than were being provided in places like Durham and Raleigh and other places like that throughout the state. The town and the university also committed to adopting parking strategies that supported transit, which included having either limited parking on downtown and campus and places like that. So you know, having a fare-free service works, you know, works well, but you also can't have parking and other things like that competing with it. So the communities made those decisions and made those investments as well. So,
yeah. We're speaking with Brian Litchfield, the director of Chapel Hill Transit, as they are preparing to celebrate their 20th anniversary of fare-free service. And to help kind of contextualize the move, too, can you share a little bit, Brian, about what the system was like before? I mean, how much were people paying? And then you already expanded on the ideology behind it a little bit, but it's not just ridership, improving ridership, that I imagine led to the partners deciding to make the shift from what the system was before to what it is now.
Yeah. So, and I think the other part to it to remember is, you know, they were, the university and others were already providing passes, especially the university were providing passes for their students and faculty and staff to ride. So the jump to fare free, especially on the university side, while a big jump, they were almost there pre 2002, right? They were already providing passes and other things like that. So, you know, students, faculty could ride, you know, as they chose, but making it fare free meant that, again, there was no administration to those passes, or we didn't have to have the, you know, the equipment to manage that, or even today we don't have to, you know, worry about those sort of things. Folks just are able to, you know, to get on and ride. So all of those things, you know, played into the decision, but it created created the opportunity not only for the two towns and the university to meet their to help meet their sustainability goals, but it's one of to me it's one of the most important pieces of the towns and the university's commitment to equity as well too. As I always tell folks, it does, you know, again, it doesn't matter where you're at in town, you know, whether you have, you know, $50 in your pocket or nothing in your pocket, or necessarily where you're going. The bus pulls up, they open the door, you hop on, and you go to where you need to go. And that's important not only for folks going to and from the university and to and from the hospital, which are, you know, again, significant partners in the system, and that's a big part of our ridership, but it's also very important for folks that are just trying to get to, you know, other things that are important in their lives, whether it's to a medical appointment or to the community center or the senior center or going to a job interview or, you know, students going to high school or middle school or, you know, things along those lines. And it provides access for all those things it allows for that access in such a way that, you know, you don't have to think about, do I have enough money or am I going to get kicked off the bus because I don't have my fare card, or you don't have to worry about it. You go out and ride. And what that benefit has created is, you know, we haven't had to invest in, you know, expanding much, you know, our road network as much as we would have had to if we didn't. We haven't had to invest in much in parking decks and things like that, that we would have had to do if we hadn't gone down this road. So I think the folks that helped create the system should be applauded for kind of their forward thinking and their leadership. And it's really cool to see, or really neat to see today, you know, even before COVID, systems were starting to move into the fare-free market. You saw, you know, Kansas City being one of the larger metropolitan areas to make that move even before COVID. And now with COVID in place, many of the systems throughout the United States were running, you know, now in the triangle running fare-free as a result of that, and are trying to look at ways to how they can keep that going. And I think it's really neat to be able to see them cite Chapel Hill and Chapel Hill Transit as an example of what they're looking at is like, hey, they've been doing this for 20 years. They've been doing this for quite a while. What can we learn from them, and how can we keep it, you know, how can we keep this going? And so hopefully what we'll see, hopefully in the Triangle and perhaps many other places, we'll be able to see that, you know, that fare-free service continue to expand, you know, as we come out of this unfortunate COVID environment that we're in.
And to help provide even more context to how, as you said, Chapel Hill Transit kind of setting an example, I imagine it's fare-free systems probably pretty rare overall in the U.S., but let alone in a town and in a community like Chapel Hill and Carrboro. I imagine the other fare-free systems that are out there are maybe on bigger scales. I don't know. What other places are out there like what we have right here in our community?
Yeah, so prior to Kansas City, we were one of the few kind of community fare free systems. So not uncommon for universities or colleges perhaps to operate fare free systems. Like University of Georgia, for example, has a you know had a large or has a large fare free system that they operate on on their campus. And they may even have moved to community fare free now as well too, around the COVID time frame. But prior to that, if you were a community member that wasn't affiliated with the university, you had to pay a fare. Same thing happened, same thing, for example, in Ames, Iowa, Iowa State. It's a fairly large university fare free system, but if you're not with the university, you pay a fare. So we were one of the few where it was community wide. So regardless of your affiliation, you could hop on and ride. And now, as I said, you're seeing places, larger metropolitan areas that are starting to, that have moved that direction and starting to explore it. And we've seen that regionally with Go Triangle, Go Durham, and Go Raleigh as a result of COVID. And I think they have an interest in looking at all three of them, looking at how can they continue that post-COVID. And we hope that that's something that they'll be able to do as well.
We're speaking with Brian Litchfield, the director of Chapel Hill Transit. On the eve of their 20th anniversary of being a fare-free transit system. And as we begin to wrap up the conversation, Brian, I know that the transit system has some big news coming up later on this month. You mentioned some electric buses being unveiled. Can you share some details into what Chapel Hill Transit, in your mind, is doing to try and innovate next? What's the next big few steps for the transit system?
Sure, it seems fitting that as we move forward with celebrating our 20th anniversary of being fare free, that we move on to kind of another innovation we'll say it's cool, right? Moving into electric buses, which I think is pretty cool. Something we've been interested for some time. There's a lot of community interest on us moving to electric buses. And so we've been fortunate where we've been able to purchase four of them, utilizing some grant funds that we received federally. And then also we received some support to help purchase one through the RESBC committee through the university that helped fund that. So a unique partnership there that allowed us to purchase an additional bus. And so we're bringing those four buses into our fleet. We're piloting them. We want to see how they perform, how they work. We're going to test them on, throughout the system on several routes, and see how they, see how they perform. And we're really excited about not only being able to move into that electric environment, but also move further down the road of meeting additional sustainability goals for the towns and university utilizing those electric vehicles. Another thing that we're moving ahead with is our bus rapid transit project that is currently being planned for the Martin Luther King South Columbia 15501 South Corridor. So between the Eubanks Park and Ride through downtown, through campus, and out to Southern Village, we're looking at a bus rapid transit project in that area. We're currently in the environmental planning stages for that project and in the federal funding pipeline. So while the environmental work is moving forward, that part of it is kind of slow, tedious stuff. It's important work that needs to be done, and that we plan for that to be finished up sometime in 2022, maybe early 2023. And then we'll continue to move forward with trying to secure federal and state funding for that project to continue to move forward.
Well, I think cool is the right word for that kind of stuff. There's some cool and exciting projects on the horizon, and it really does feel like a privilege to have such a resource as a fare-free transit system right here in our community. If you want to learn more about Chapel Hill Transit, get details on their routes or any recent news regarding the transit system, townofchapelhill.org is going to have everything you need. And Brian Litchfield, thanks so much for taking the time to join us here on News on the Hill to share details about the 20th anniversary of the fare-free system.
It's good talking to you, Brighton. Thanks for your time.
Going to take a quick break now on News on the Hill. When we come back, we will have another look at your events calendar.